At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you for joining us. If you haven't done so, please make sure to go ahead and subscribe and share Apple Podcasts, Spotify, rate and review the program. Actually, you also see it on our YouTube channel, Cannabis Radio. Make sure to look for that. All the episodes also drop in there for you. And of course, Amazon Music, Google, all major platforms. Thank you for finding the show. Now, we're going to talk about the great state of Maryland here on the program. The Associated Press reported that Maryland has become the 23rd state to legally sell adult use cannabis. About 100 stores that have already been licensed to sell cannabis for medicinal purposes has begun selling it recreational. And that's more than 5 years after the state started selling medical marijuana. Now, hopefully we get the same thing in Maryland will happen to Florida coming up in 2024. So for me, there's a personal interest to see how this rolls out. And that look at how far does, you know, the country's come right now. We're almost at halfway, half the states, you can almost say literally half because District of Columbia is included, having half of the country covered right now with adult use cannabis. That's a wonderful thing. Right now, I'm want to go and talk about the changes in Maryland. And with me is one of those dispensary owners with several large dispensaries in Columbia and Baltimore, Maryland. I'm here with the co-chief executive officer of Remedy Maryland, Brandon Barksdale. Brandon, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you making time to go and talk with us. I'm glad we had the chance to go ahead and set this up. And for those that might not have had a chance to hear your backstory, I would tell you to go ahead and refer you back to Plant Profits, where when you were with Dalwhinnie Farms, that people should go ahead and take a listen to the backstory and where you came from and you're on your way up to where you are today. Make sure to check that episode out. Now, first of all, WJZ TV, the CBS affiliate in Baltimore, they reported that the first week of adult use in Maryland has been profitable, extremely profitable. Residents spending more than almost $21 million at dispensaries. And they reported, quote, this early windfall offers a glimpse at what officials believe could ultimately become a billion-dollar industry for Maryland, end quote. So you have a couple of stores. You actually just recently opened a 10,000-square-foot superstore in Columbia, Maryland. Talk to me about the turnout and response that Remedy Maryland has already seen so far.
Yeah, Brasco, it's been really great. I mean, the first day we saw well over 2,000 people, which was amazing, wow, across our two stores. And just seeing the amount of new customers coming in compared to the medical market has been exponential. So, I mean, right now we're all just kind of trying to adapt operationally. And as you know, there's a lot of legislative changes that are constantly coming down on a daily basis, and just being able to adapt and react to those and get those implemented to be able to have smooth operations for our customers.
And right off the bat, because of adult use, I mean, how many new faces do you happen to, did your team happen to see aside from the normal group that already has, you know, medical marijuana cards, and we're able to go and visit this facility?
It kicked off with about 3X almost, and wow, 4X in some cases. So it was really great. Again, like, I don't think anyone actually knew what to expect going into July 1, because it's not, you know, any type of foresight you can have into what the demand may be. So everyone was preparing for, you know, whatever they thought was the market multiplier. And from there, just trying to make the best decision that they could to gear up for adult use. So I think it was really great. I think everybody's very pleased with the initial turnout. Obviously, we have a long road ahead of us in terms of growing the market. And so, you know, Maryland being one of the busier, you know, the busier interstates going from north to south and south to north, we get a lot of out-of-state traffic as well, with people driving, you know, up and down 95, getting to wherever they're going. And so we're seeing that traffic trickle in as well. So it's just going to be an interesting journey. So we're all looking forward to it.
No doubt about it. Now, existing medical marijuana businesses were able to convert their licenses into adult use licenses so that people would have a place to buy legal cannabis. And lawmakers took that approach hoping that easy to access and affordable legal cannabis would squash the black market from day one of legalization. So we'll talk about the illicit market later on, but first off, just talk to me about the transition that you had. I don't know if other states had this same transition, but to get the transition to go ahead and go from medical to adult use, especially for Remedy Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, all the medical stores, there's about 100 dispensaries that were operating in the medical market. All of those dispensaries had the opportunity to be grandfathered in with a like conversion application and obviously fees associated with it. So it was just really just getting your paperwork documented on that you had interest in moving to a adult use recreational store. And then again, the application process was pretty seamless. The fees were what they were. So, I think everybody that wanted to continue on in a recreational capacity was able to do so, as long as you were part of the, you know, originated medical license.
Now, I want to ask one thing when it comes to what people have been saying about the actual sales here. I was looking just actually today, there was a story that came out about one of the presidential candidates, Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, that sees what's going on in Maryland, but doesn't look at anything where they're going to make any move to their market. So with that said, you have DC that's close to you. And I'm really trying to think about what the other adjoining states there are, and I don't believe that have medical, that don't have adult use right now. So with that going on, what do you think about the fact that this was the difficulty of making sure that this state would turn adult use? Was there a lot that you saw right here that, you know, well, is there going to be a lot more people that will still be continuing from Virginia now that legal cannabis is in Maryland, they could just make the drive over, or from other adjoining states?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, from like a Delaware, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, I can definitely see that cross-border traffic, even with Virginia as well. I think, you know, D.C. creates a unique variable, given that they're still operating in a great capacity. Their medical market is a little more lenient as well, in terms of self-prescribing and things of that nature. So, you know, I think, you know, generally anyone that's coming from around the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area has either had access to or could easily get access to, you know, cannabis if they chose to. The northern states and the states to our east and west, you know, definitely have some broader limitations, right? And so, you know, I definitely see that traffic trickling over the borders, and those bordering dispensaries are definitely seeing ample business from that cross-border, you know, traffic, I think. But, you know, I don't believe that those states coming online to, you know, to our south will impact us that, you know, that broadly. And I mean, obviously there would be some implications from, you know, like a Delaware, Pennsylvania, West Virginia perspective, but, you know, I think there's, a strong enough demand for medical and recreational cannabis in the state of Maryland that, you know, we have a pretty healthy, economy, for it to be able to substantiate it.
And it's interesting. Washington Post actually brings up the whole idea of where the landscape is right now, because Baltimore, Maryland, is the one state in the mid-Atlantic states right now that has adult use. And one of the issues that Virginia is dealing with, while it's medical, has been the illicit market. But now this is where, just like in New York, when they finally got themselves to adult use or recreational, I always like to use adult use. I always got trained, you know what, NCIA always trying to kind of tell me, call it adult use. You don't have to call it recreational. It's okay. It's both are all very well acceptable. The thing is that Virginia will continue to have the issues with the illicit market, but Maryland, this all changes. And like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit later on, but I want to go to commercial break. Okay. And when we come back, I want to just ask you some issues when it comes to social equity, which now that we're into the space here, New York, we see what the comparisons are with what they've done with social equity in other markets. And I want to see what Maryland's been doing this in the same vein. And I want to ask you about the limitations on possession and what you're able to go ahead and buy, and, you know, how much you can go to Remedy Maryland and go pick up at one of your dispensaries, how much you're able to go and get. There are a bit of limitations that I don't know how specific or strict it might be, but I'd love to get your take on it. So I'm here with the co Chief Executive Officer at Remedy Maryland, Brandon Barksdale, here on Blunt Business. We're back after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with the co-CEO of Remedy Maryland, Brandon Barksdale. By the way, if you want to take a look at the website while we're going on with the interview, the website is remedymaryland.com. Make sure to go look for that, remedymaryland.com. And Brandon, more licenses are going to be distributed early next year, with an emphasis on addressing equity concerns for minority and women-owned businesses. And the law is allowing the Maryland Cannabis Administration to issue additional grower, processor, and dispensary licenses and new incubator licenses over two licensing rounds. That's what was the plan on doing this when the rollout of adult use came in. Now, the State Department of Commerce they're now instilling that second round of funding to help social equity cannabis businesses with operational costs to open their shops. And they're going to be opening up applications for a $40 million grant that's being funded for social equity applicants, and pre-approval will be starting August 1st. And the money will be coming from the Maryland Cannabis Business Assistance Loan. So I don't know if I've asked or if we've talked about at all your entry into the space with a medical license, converting it to adult use. But what can you tell me in terms of social equity, the importance that Maryland has made compared to what we would see in, say, New York State?
Yeah, I think our incoming governor has definitely made it a priority to address the inequities around cannabis, for sure. So, you know, social equity is on the height of the priority list and on part of every conversation. You know, some of the funding and application, you know, processes, the information is still being disseminated. So, you know, we haven't really quite got our hands around what that process is going to look like. You know, all we know is that, you know, there will be set aside license wise, there will be set aside business wise to help create a stable economy for those social equity incubator micro licenses. And so, you know, I think as we kind of get more information and more becomes widely available, we'll start to see how that plan unfolds. You know, but we also have to be extremely supportive. I mean, a lot of the people that will be applying for micro licenses, a lot of the social equity applicants, it'll be their first time operating, verticals and so, or horizontals. And so it'll be super important to try to, you know, get them in tune, you know, to our market, our industry, and make that knowledge as widely available as possible and kind of create more of, like, again, that incubator knowledge share. That's extremely important for people to be successful. I think Maryland had a really mature medical market that went really well. And so being able to leverage from those experiences and disseminate that information for people to be able to learn from, you know, the contractors, the prior employees, the business owners that, you know, existed in that market, going into adult use and some of the newer licenses that are coming online, this is going to be really, really important. So hopefully that momentum continues. I think it will. I know the state is still collecting information from, you know, some of the grandfathered in operators. And so, you know, I'm sure that information is being aggregated and used to determine how many licenses, to determine, you know, who's on like the pre-approved list from, you know, a list of, you know, different suppliers, you know, and professional service organizations that have supported the industry in the past. And so I'm really hoping that all that information just gets disseminated in a way that's effective for those applicants coming along.
So comparison with New York, actually, they're awarding 50% of all their adult use licenses to social and economic equity applicants. And most recently, marijuana businesses have already secured $150 million in private investment for the Social Equity Fund. That happened just recently in June. When you look at the levels that's gone on here, while New York's getting all that wonderful, you know, they're doing as good as they can be with getting enough licenses out there. The conditional adult use retail dispensary or card licenses out there. But we've had people we've brought on that have talked to us about the issues when it comes to, you know, the inspections, you know, trying to open up with a soft opening, then having to go and open up a pop-up, they're going to have retail sales, then be able to go and open up their facility, and that the paperwork has gotten very much mounting and has really, you know, has not been very streamlined. So people have been having that issue, but in New York also, they have what, 10,000 plus portable dispensaries out there that are selling illegally once adult use came into play. When you look at that right there, what can you tell me in terms of what you see Maryland doing right now to help streamline the process of social equity licensing so that when new licenses are going to be coming up again, they're going for April 1st for pre-approval into this business assistance loan. What can you tell me? Have you heard a lot about the process and how, if that has been difficult or has it been much more streamlined, taking a page from what New York might've been doing to do better?
The prior application processes have been very streamlined, you know, from a medical perspective. Mm-hmm. The conversion going into recreational has been very streamlined. I can't imagine that the social equity, you know, application process will not be streamlined. And so, you know, I think the state is learning and ramping up from a resource perspective to be able to support in whatever facet that they need. And I think as it relates to, you know, policing and driving compliance, you know, within the state around, you know, cannabis activities operationally, like from a retail perspective, cultivation, manufacturing, et cetera, you know, they're on it. I mean, we've gotten 3 visits from the MCA, you know, and it hasn't even been, you know, we're just going into our 3rd week here. So, you know, I think that we will continue to see that effort. I think we'll continue to see that momentum until things start to stabilize and even past that. And so I think there'll be, you know, ample support and streamlined processes on a governing level to be able to make sure those applicants make it to market efficiently.
So without going into full detail, there was a story I wanted to take from DC News Now, talking about the fact that now there is more increased demand because of adult use. And there's one particular company they talked to that talked about trying to be able to match their supply to the increased demand, and that they've had to amp up production once legalization came into play for recreational cannabis, having to expand their cultivation and increase partnerships in the state to meet the demand. What can you tell me was any, what you did to prepare for any changes because of the supply and demand that was going to come to your stores?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we were a little optimistic, and rightfully so, in the sense that, you know, we went from a 4,000 square foot location to 10,000 square foot stores. And so I think, you know, we wanted to make sure we had the operational capacity, front of house and back of house, to be able to effectively support the additional demand that was coming to market. And then leading into July 1, obviously there's a resource ramp. There's an inventory component to it that we wanted to make sure that we were stocked to be able to meet the demand. And again, a lot of that was unknown on what it was. So we tried to create a lot of variable components. We tried to create a good spread of inventory that, you know, had very, you know, solid SKU diversity to be able to meet whatever the demand it was for those particular you know, customers that were coming online. And I think we did just that. So I'm very happy for that.
So since we talked about supply and demand, let's go ahead and talk about the supply that individual cannabis users can have in Maryland, because there's something specific that people need to know. After the ballot measure was passed by voters in November, it made it legal for people 21 and older to possess up to 1.5 ounces of cannabis, up to 12 grams of concentrated cannabis, or a total amount that does not exceed 750 milligrams of THC. And Marylanders are allowed to grow up to 2 plants at home, but they have to make sure that they have permission from the homeowner and keep the plants out of public view. And the Maryland Cannabis Administration told the Washington Post that recreational users, this is important, can be cited for possessing more than 1.5 ounces of cannabis in that limit, even if they grow it at home. And a civil fine can be applied to people in possession of between 1.5 and 2.5 ounces of cannabis, and possessing more than 2.5 ounces could result in criminal charges. So, Brandon, talk about what you know about these set limitations, the measures that you have to make in the stores. I mean, is it something that you have to be policing yourself about how much people are buying from the stores? And, you know, are you concerned about the fact that people are going to be worried about how much they can have, that this is going to be really enforced?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be enforced. I think that the way that we enforce it and the way some of the systems and technology support us in enforcing it are very strong. Everybody gets a customer profile. Everybody's profile is attached to their state driver's license. So, you know, we see exactly how much people have purchased in a day. We know exactly what the medical allotments are at any given point in time. The compliance around that is very strict. And so with that, we feel, you know, very, very confident that we'll be able to continue to be, you know, that that compliant. And I think this is ample. It's ample supply, you know, for someone to be able to use from a medical perspective, with the limitations that are set there with allotments, as well as, you know, for recreational use. I mean, I think it's pretty standard across, you know, adult use states. And, you know, I don't see this being completely out of line from that. And I think it's definitely a fair amount for any one person to hold or possess unless you were operating business.
And I wasn't sure about that, because that's one of the first times I actually read a story where they actually, I got to go and see the layout of how much you're really going to have. The one thing is, you definitely, it's not outlier because of the fact that there is home grows that are allowed, which is some states do not have at the moment, which is good. But overall, I mean, what Maryland's done right now and what you're able to go and work with, talk to me about what you feel is the room for growth. Since everything's all laid out, I mean, do you feel like the plan right now really makes it inevitable that growth for Remedy Maryland is going to be pretty easy to go and make happen, because what adult use rollout has already come out is very equitable and very comparable to other states, and it's not something overly strict or stringent?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously going to be room for growth. I mean, you know, we see every market that comes online and it always scales up before it plateaus. And I think that we haven't got to that plateau or that coast yet. We're still seeing a strong amount of new customers every day. And that has not changed from July 1. And so I think as long as we continue to see that momentum, you know, there's definitely, you know, some additional things to look forward to, as it, you know, as it relates to like growth in the marketplace. And when the additional licenses come online, obviously that slows a little bit, but I think it's all fair, and I think it's healthy competition. I think the state will have to continue to assess and look at, you know, overall market spend, right, and make that discernment on where the right level of balance is from operators to consumers and customers. And as long as there's the right ratio of that to create, you know, the healthy space for the social equity applicants and the existing businesses that were grandfathered in to stay healthy, to stay profitable, and give them some room for growth and market capture, we should be in a good place. The only time that seemingly doesn't work or isn't in favor of those businesses who'll be investing a lot and looking for, you know, some business life cycle event that will help them, you know, set their futures and the futures of their families. I think that it starts to become unfavorable when the state stops paying attention. And so as long as, you know, we're constantly looking, constantly assessing and starting to understand where that tipping point is, I think that, and you have to leave room also, right? Like you have to leave room. You can't take it all the way up to like the, you know, that capacity where, you know, people are losing businesses and losing, you know, their own fortunes to be able to, you know, make this happen. And I think that the state has to be understanding of that. And as long as they're supportive of it, I think we'll end up in a good place. I mean, that's the longer story short.
Right. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up very, very shortly after a commercial break. When we come back, I want to go and ask you about the Alyssa market. We talked about it, kind of teased it off the top. We're going to go ahead and talk about what has been said about that so far. And I also want to get just the concept of Remedy Maryland, your new 10,000 square foot superstore and your store within a store concept. We're going to talk about that here. Final questions with Brandon Barksdale, co-CEO of Remedy Maryland. Website is remedymaryland.com. Take a look at that as we go to break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're in the home stretch. I'm here on Blunt Business with Brandon Barksdale, the co-CEO of Remedy Maryland. And I want to ask one more thing for the Washington Post. A lot of things they brought up about Maryland and the rollout of adult use cannabis that happened on July 1st. And of course, $21 million in sales, which is wonderful for everybody out there, including yourselves. So the illicit market is taking a hit. Now, state lawmakers told the Washington Post that they see legalizing cannabis would tamp down on the legal market for the drug, providing a safer regulated product. And there are some jurisdictions like Colorado that have seen an increase in the black market. Prince George's County's state attorney, Aisha Braveboy, said officials think it can be would be because people felt more comfortable possessing cannabis once it became legal, leading to more sales on the illegal market. So with that said, adult use now as the illegal market, have you seen any real significant changes, any stories about more stores that are popping up illegally or anything like what New York's been seeing and how adult use could curb the impact on it? If you feel like there's a, if that's a concern going forward that we're going to see an increase now that people just realize, okay, well, you can have it and possess it.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything like that just yet. Okay. And I don't know that we will. I think that what's happening in New York is a little different. And I think, you know, Maryland was a little more prepared, obviously, with states like New York as a prime example, to drive speed to getting to adult use and not leaving a lot of room for interpretation. And I think that that helps a lot. When I look at, you know, the way the entire program is structured, I mean, it is to make it comparable to the illicit market from a dollar for dollar exchange, which is why the taxes are set up the way they are. And I think that, again, that just helps everyone across the board to get safer products to medical patients, to get safer market, safer products and SKUs to adult use customers as well. And so I think that we are seeing that play out. Now what happens in the long road is, you know, I mean, no one knows, but I think that right now everyone feels pretty comfortable that we can definitely stabilize it. And what you saw in Colorado is probably primarily driven off of the lack of attention to the overall market and number of licenses that were coming online and some of the cultivators and growers that weren't capped, you know, just literally fighting for survival at that point. And I think, you know, we see some of that play out in states that, you know, came online a little earlier. And, you know, now that we're able to dial it in and have better examples to base, you know, the newer market coming online off of, you know, those legislative rounds aren't making the same mistakes. So
let's go and talk about Remedy Maryland and the setup now, where you now have a great setup where you have Baltimore, you have a store there, and then 30 minutes southwest of Baltimore proper, you have this 10,000 square foot superstore. I want to go and ask about that now. It's been open up for 7 months, and the idea was you were going to be offering in the space unique experiential events for the cannabis community, an open floor plan to give a store within a store model, allowing patients and adult use consumers to explore brands and products, and a one-of-a-kind dispensary experience. Well, now you have this full scale adult uses here. Talk to me about how the store is put together. You have a lot of brand selection, product exclusivity, and a very more robust menu in the state. Talk to me about what's been set up so far.
I mean, exactly what you just described. So, I mean, our store is 10,000 square feet. It, you know, we have a very, very large parking area. It's meant to accommodate a lot of people. And so, you know, for us, you know, the store within the stores allows suppliers to be able to debut their brands. So they have, again, their own kind of Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's-like setup where they're able to display their products the way that they see fit, which is a unique kind of approach to a cannabis dispensary. And, you know, with them being able to debut their brand and showcase themselves the way that aligns with, you know, their brand management and their brand direction, it also gives them a chance to put themselves in the best forward facing picture to the end consumer. And typically that's something that's skipped and the dispensary has that authority, but we wanted to make sure we tried to bridge that gap. And so, you know, it does allow us to partner better with our suppliers, which is great. So we do get, you know, certain products that, you know, a lot of other dispensaries don't. And then we also drive our own in-house products where we're able to again, drive some exclusivity around the products that we carry and the SKUs that we carry versus others. So it does drive a unique experience. You know, it's definitely more of like a Total Wine, you know, Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's type of model when you stop in our store. And I think people notice the difference. It's definitely a different customer experience with activations, learnings, you know, artistic elements, and it just drives a different experience. So,
you know, I want to ask about that because in that experience, first of all, the partnerships you put together, just from when you initially opened in December, this new superstore, Cookies, Green Thumb, SunMed, Trulieve, Curio Wellness, and Holistic Industries, already setting up. But then the other part you just said right now, I want to unpack that. The store within a store, I think of Macy's, you know, they have Toys R Us, they have Finish Line, they have, and I forget the other one, I can't think right now, but like they have particular brands in their own sections within the store. JCPenney now, like with Sephora they used to have, but now they have their own section. It's that same kind of concept in the stores. And the idea where you have this is that it's like branded beauty counters in traditional department stores. The concept brings all these names together. So when you bring that all out and you really have this real set where from my perspective, it's to see what a national dispensary would be. Like if it would be a store that had chains across the country, you're creating that model already right now.
That's correct. That's exactly what the layout and the structure is set up for, to be able to build and replicate it, and also to create a framework that works for them and a complete vertically integrated perspective. And I think, you know, with us being horizontal, it gives us the best kind of framework to be able to do that, because we're able to focus on what's most important, which is the product's quality and the end customer experience. And so that's our primary motivation, and making sure that people have a seamless and strong, fun, but efficient, you know, retail experience. And so that's a definitely a huge differentiator. The partnerships that we set up are definitely, you know, partnerships that are from large single state operators to large multi-state operators. And so being able to bridge that, replicate that, and drive down this path of growth for Remedy is going to be something that we're all looking forward to, because I think it's definitely something needed in this space.
Let's go and talk about the store itself, remedymaryland.com. And of course, you can find all the information over on the website, remedymaryland.com, and a lot of different products there. With some good deals, talk to me about really what's been standing out and what you could tell us in terms of what have been the biggest sellers right now? What's been going off the shelves the most right now for those that have been coming in the last few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, flower always is going to be our top mover. We're definitely starting to see edibles pick up in sales as well. The adult use market is definitely buying and balancing some of the lower potency items, like from in like a micro dose type fashion. So we're definitely seeing those SKUs pick up versus the medical market where you know, higher dosage is more effective for, you know, acute wellness implications. And so for us, we're definitely seeing the spread of brand awareness and dosage and testing results across terpenes, THC, et cetera, start to spread, which is great. It shows that, you know, we do have a healthy market. It shows that people are exploring different products. And again, we're just trying to continue to build that knowledge base so people know exactly what it is that they're consuming. So, you know, we definitely see, you know, disposables and carts kind of tailing after edibles. And so the pre-rolls have definitely also picked up dramatically. And so, you know, all these are just different components that are showcasing that, you know, the rec market is here and, you know, they're definitely doing what we would have expected them to do, which is explore the easier products that are ready to go, the lower dosage products that give people more of an entry into cannabis. And, you know, we're continuing to see that spread. So we just want to keep continue to diversify SKUs. We want to continue to do most of the traditional retail things that that we see successful in other commodities or in other industries. And so, yeah, we're just following suit.
I look at the brands on the website, so many, and a lot of them I know we've already talked to here on Blunt Business or Grassroots Marketing. I look at Wana, I see Tyson 2.0, Ric Flair Drip, and Muse. I saw G Leaf is in there. Like, there's so many brands in here. That's amazing what you got. And interesting, you talk about how much people are buying flower. Do you see where among the sales, is it in some cases I've seen where edibles has definitely have been a larger percentage of sales for a lot of dispensaries in other states? If you had to go ahead and look at it right now, what would be the preference? Is it flower versus edibles? Is it flower much more prominent than it is edibles or vapes or tinctures?
Yeah, that's what I was describing earlier. But yeah, so flower would be our most prominent driver of sales right now. Edible second to that, and then next would be kind of carts, disposable vapes, and tinctures.
It's fascinating. I like that.
The concentrates are only left for the medical market right now. So until that changes, it leaves it out for adult use or recreational customers.
Fantastic. So with that said, remedymaryland.com, that's where you go ahead and find out more about it. And of course, visitor stores in Baltimore and Columbia, Maryland. And Brandon, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us about the Maryland market. Congratulations on the market, and hope you got a good chunk of those millions of dollars in sales, and hopefully all just continues.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Brasco. Anytime. You're always welcome.
And we're glad to have you on again. Brandon Barksdale, co-CEO of Remedy Maryland here on Blunt Business. Thanks for being on. And for listeners, thank you for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.